Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 128 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my wonderful monster hunting friend, Ben Bellhoff.
You know,
how are you doing tonight, Ben?
I'm doing great, but that is a game that I have not actually played before, is Monster Hunter.
I guess
that there's a new one coming out, and it's supposed to be pretty good, so I don't know, maybe I'll check that out, but...
Jump in!
Yeah, I've never played any of them, but I will definitely gladly hunt monsters with you in other types of games.
Yeah, like maybe D&D.
What's that?
It's a tabletop RPG where you use your imagination to create stories.
Like a kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, anyways, no, seriously though, I think we should just go right in because it's in my hand.
Yeah,
I've got it right here.
It is right behind me as well. We're gonna talk, I know we've been talking about a lot of the previews of the Monster Manual that Wizards has done, but the books, they are arriving. They are starting to arrive in your friendly local game stores. The early access and the access is out on D&D Beyond. Both Ben and I got our books in the last several days as well. So we're just going to talk a little bit about first impressions of the Monster Manual. And just kind of, we're not going to go super deep. We've also got some brand new UA that they stealth dropped
in the middle of all these like monster previews. Suddenly it's like, oh, here's a bunch of new subclasses, you know, just take me down.
Kind of like they did the Artificer, like weird drop. It's just like Merry Christmas type thing. So
yeah, surprise, a subclass for everybody. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people.
A lot of people, yeah. So let's kick it off, Ben. Have you been looking through the Monster Manual? What are your initial thoughts as you've paged through and started looking at stat blocks?
Yeah. First and foremost, just readability is so much better. I mean, if you look at something, especially some of the more complicated creatures, like if you go through and look at their actions, you know, bonus actions, all that stuff, it's concise and doesn't have a whole lot of like extra fluff to it, so that you don't have to like kind of dig through and figure out, you know, okay, well, they roll something and then, you know, hey, if it's like, you know, they succeed, then, you know, something happens. If they don't succeed, then something else happens. But, you know, we're doing this and that. Like, yeah, it felt really wordy in kind of the old Monster Manual. So just the stat blocks alone, I love. They're concise, they're tight, they're right there with the pertinent information that you need to just run the monster. Like, if you're someone who like really, you know, runs a game by the seat of your pants and you just need to like grab something really quick, you just open up the book and you have all the abilities, everything you need right there. Like, spell casting is a ton easier to go through if you have anything that casts a spell. Everything broken out into, you know, action, bonus action, reaction is like more concise and easier to see. You have features that are now listed underneath that kind of stuff, as opposed to something that was separated before that, you know, it just kind of always happened or is in a turn or something like that. But now it's baked into the actual like control of the monster. But yeah, just overall, like that was the first thing that really hit me, is that like, you know, just at most you're looking at maybe half a page of a stat block, as opposed to some that were, you know, a page and a half in the previous book. And it's just so much easier to read, and I love it.
Well, they had to fit a bunch more monsters in, right? Because there's like 500 plus stat blocks in this thing. One of the, I completely agree with you on the, like the ordering and the layout, because right on page 4, it has a really nice, what's new in the 2025 version. Which is really nice. It goes through that, all the different pieces that are new. It has how to use a monster and breaks the stat block down on page 5, which is also nice. And interestingly, unlike most of the other monster manuals, the monster manuals in the monsters in this are all alphabetized.
Yes.
So it is completely alphabetized.
Oh, and
which
I love
is really, really nice. But because it does make things easier to find. If you're looking for the name of the monster or someone tells you a monster name, you don't have to know what family it's in necessarily now. Mm-hmm. But one of the really cool things is if you go to the back of the book, they have a ton of tables now, which allow you to find monsters by type still.
Yep.
Right. So they've got like monsters by group, monsters by creature type, monsters by CR rating,
monsters by environment.
And then obviously, because everything is alphabetized, you know roughly where to look for each of those things. In fact, it honestly would have been even nicer, a little nicer, I think, if in parentheses in all the tables, they just put the page number.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
And talk about easy lookup. It's incredibly easy on D&D Beyond, like the digital version, because in the little monsters by X type or whatever, or by, you know, by area or whatnot, because you can just click the link to the stat block on digital, which is really, really nice. And so you can kind of just have it your way. It's the buffet of finding stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of really good things. Things have gotten more concise. There's a lot of like little tables now in different monsters. Mm-hmm. Like these animal lords. They've got a whole like three different random roll tables on appearances. What they look like, right?
Really quick before we go back, I just wanted to talk about in the appendix one more thing.
Sure.
So underneath the different monster lists, there is also just one page, it's a page 374. There's a monster conversion. So basically, things that were like renamed or changed from the 2014 to the 2024 book, it tells you exactly where you can find that sort of thing. Like one of the big differences is that a lot of the like species named monsters that are also playable characters or, you know, playable species, they've changed so that it's not like, oh, orcs are bad. And, you know, some people are complaining about this, but it's a stupid complaint. Whereas if you look under orc, it's like, well, where am I going to find this? Well, it's under tough, which is like, you know, just a basic, you know, archetype of, hey, here's a tough humanoid.
Yeah, fight. Generic stat blocks.
Exactly. And then you throw whatever sort of, you know, species flavoring you want on there. Like if you're going against, you know, going into a fight club and you want a whole bunch of different toughs, you can, you know, have them be different types of you know, characters and everything. But here's a stat block that you can use for them. And you don't have to be like, oh, well, this is an orc. I don't know why an orc's here, but it is. Or like the rug of smothering. Now it's animated rug of smothering along with other animated like things. A big one in here is like the adult blue Dracolich. Well, a Dracolich is now its own thing with a much better stat block than it was before. So yeah, there's all these different things in here that just kind of give you that, you know, thing that you might have been missing if you, you know, looked up your favorite monster and it's not in here. This is where you want to look to see, you know, what it got changed to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I kind of like that because generic stat blocks are, in my opinion, one of the most useful things for a DM, period.
Definitely.
And they said they have like 50 of them or so in here, just like the generic stat blocks, like the assassin or the cultist or a caster, yep, or the tough, bandit. Like you said, yeah, or bandit or the boss tough. And so being able to just grab that and then skin it however you want is incredibly handy when you are putting things together quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so having more of those generic type stat blocks is a huge boon, huge boon. And like you said, I don't think you need necessarily drow separate or necessarily orc separate, because you can, there's so many generic stat blocks now, you can throw them in any number of things.
Even though the drow are still separated out. But that's because they have entirely like different things going with it, with, you know, like sunlight sensitivity and stuff like that. You can't really throw that into just a generic thing.
Well, I think, and that's the interesting thing. So I'm actually looking this up right now. Most of the drow actually were converted two generics.
Oh, oh, okay.
Except for the Drider. The Drider is its own thing. So but yeah, like the Drow is a priest acolyte. The Drow Elite War is a gladiator. The Mage is a bandit deceiver. The Priest of Loth is the fiend cultist and such. So they've really gone away from the, like, especially the more playable species in as actual stat blocks and turn them into the generic stat block.
Yeah. As I was glancing at this, I totally saw what I was looking at, and I mixed up Cyclops with Cyclops Sentry, thinking it was a Drow, and it still had the Drow in the name, but nope. So don't mind me. It's late and it's been a long day.
Yes. And I mean, if we want to point out other things that are really cool, that are different, it's the art.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
They have packed this book full of absolutely brand new art, and I'm in love. Like, they're, and I like it really too, because a lot of the art is far more dynamic than it used to be. Whereas, like, some of the previous art was, here's the thing standing or whatever.
Yeah.
And most of the art in this book is whatever they're depicting doing something, which I really like, because I think that helps elicit more images in your head or more stories in your head versus just seeing what it is. Like, this, God, I'm going to mispronounce it. The Hezru, the demon frog thing, right? You actually see it sitting on a pile of bones, like, and someone's hand sticking out as it's eating them. That's pretty cool. You see the Helmed Horror fighting against a mage. The mage is casting lightning bolts, and they are immune to lightning. They got spell immunity to, like, lightning bolt. The Helmed Horror is immune to three spells chosen by its creator. Typical choices include heat metal, lightning bolt, and magic missile. So you actually see a picture of a mage casting lightning bolt and it just being absorbed. So really cool stuff like that. Yeah. I really, really like it a lot. They've done a fantastic job.
I don't know what it is, but almost every single time I open up the book, I end up in the Copper Dragon section. And I gotta tell you, I love all the art for the Copper Dragons so much.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So the three they have is the Copper Dragon Wyrmling, which is a little dragon reading books, and he's got a little mousy friend, and it's just really cute. And then
they have unique art for all the wyrmlings.
Yeah.
As well, which is amazing.
But if you want to talk about doing stuff, the adult Copper Dragon picture or art is just amazing. And I mean, all of these different art pieces have some sort of subtitle or subtext to them and everything. Like, for the adult Copper Dragon, surrounded by guardians of the forest, an adult Copper Dragon bequeaths a magic sword to a worthy hero. And it's just this really cool, like, looking dragon doing magic and making a magic sword appear to this hero standing in front of him with, like, this verdant background and stuff. And it's just amazing. I love this. And then, of course, the ancient super Copper cool. Dragon. Just the ancient Copper Dragon needs to be, like, my phone lock screen or something like that. That's such a great picture.
Yeah, like, and like the Hydra picture. It's got an adventure cutting off heads.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's what you do with the Hydra.
Regrowing heads.
That's how you defeat Hydras. That is what you always learn to do. Yeah, the Gorgons are really cool looking, turning things to stone, running around. The green dragon. Oh, the green dragon art is great. I mean, yeah.
I love the one where it's like swimming through the swamp.
Yes. Like, oh, definitely.
It's just so cool. Just so cool. Like, we could geek out about this art for a while. I mean, what do you think, Ben, of the new dragon designs? Because all 10 dragons were redesigned. And they were redesigned in such a way to kind of make them less generic. I guess the old dragons, if you're used to the 2014, they may have slightly different wings or slightly different features, obviously different heads, mm-hmm. right? But for the most part, the bodies were very similar.
Yeah.
Barring like, oh, here's a kind of a unique tail or a unique head, right? But these new dragon designs are fully different. Like fully unique. They kind of accentuated all of the defining characteristics of each dragon, but more so.
Mm-hmm.
Like the green dragon got this more snake-like head, and the gold dragon is like more of a serpentine.
Yeah.
Dragon, like a, almost like more the Chinese inspired,
mm-hmm.
like the longer dragon. Yeah, dragons,
the long
right?
body, and then the wings just going down the whole body now too. Which
yeah,
looks
yeah.
Great. The black
red
dragon.
Just got more.
Oh yeah,
like
more
tough looking
fire and horns and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the black dragon with like the just the front of its face just kind of melted off from its acid and stuff. I mean, it's all the stuff is just it's epic. It's great. It looks so good.
So I think, speaking for both of us, this is a ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
Just and just from a mechanical standpoint, it's leaps and bounds better than the 2014 version. It is. The monsters have more they can do. Period. Mm-hmm. Like the most creatures have had some tweaks of some sort added. Many of them have new bonus actions now they didn't have before. Some of them that didn't have range attacks at all now have range attacks. Which can be very nice. Like the Trask has a ranged attack now.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. You can't fly and pelt it with a billion arrows to kill it anymore. It's much more Godzilla like.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the big things too, that I really like is the fact that even if you look at the different, like, so they were talking about specifically the Beholder, how they made it different. It's easier to run and everything. And like looking at the stats and what it can do and stuff, it can't do anything different than it did before. But it does have, if I remember correctly, when I was looking at it, it does have more health. But the explanations for how everything works is a lot easier to understand and read. And that was one of the first things that I went to look at is just that alone. But anything that doesn't seem like has really changed much, it has just at least in health to make it stand up better to, you know, the power creep and everything like that to make the CR balance better. So if you're looking at something, and again, you're looking at your favorite monster and you're like, you know, you have all its stats memorized and you're looking at something new, there is definitely something new there, even if it doesn't look like it's a ton, but it is more better balance for everything. But you're right, for the ones that have, you know, added abilities or new bonus actions or something that was an action that's turned into a bonus action or something, like that is where a lot of the thought and effort and a ton of stuff has gone into, which definitely makes it well worth looking at and picking up and just, you know, using going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, in some ways, I wish they would have gone even further, especially for like the higher CR creatures,
mm-hmm.
Just to have more options to pick from. I understand they have to balance it against a formula and whatnot. And they were a little tied down because I don't think they were able, or they didn't change the CR of a monster that existed before.
Yeah.
They basically just tweaked it to bring it up to what the standard was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But regardless, at the end of the day, you should be able to build more accurate encounters with this book than you did with the 2014 version, which I think will be a huge boon to DMs everywhere, because your stuff should at least a little more do what you expect it to do and be not as underpowered, because like Ben said, many of them did get HP buffs.
Yes.
Which is a big deal, because that may be another round that it lasts and can help it hit its actual CR. So lots of really good stuff. We both really love the book. I think this might be my favorite of the three.
I mean, it's got some really great stuff to play around with, which I like. I mean, the Dungeon Master's Guide is still absolutely fantastic, and I love it. But a lot of the stuff that's in there is like kind of more of a reminder, or like a, you know, a little push to be like, hey, Ben, remember to do this and stuff like that. Whereas this feels like a whole new set of toys. And I
just love making encounters.
Yeah. Especially with new stuff that I've never seen before, or new stat blocks that I can actually play with reliably. Like, there's a commoner stat block that you don't have to be all like peasant or noble or whatever. You can use this for everything that you want. Anybody in a town is just a commoner. They have a whole wonderful stat block. It's not just an appendix in a monster manual from 2014 anymore.
Yeah. Which is really nice. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. But yeah, go check it out. Excuse me. It's on D&D Beyond. It's at your friendly local game stores now, especially if you want the collector's edition cover that you can only get in game stores for the most part. I think there's a few places online that sell it, but for the most part, it's game store only. So this was the perfect time if you wanted to start your special edition cover collection to start that with the three new books. But all three are out now. And so we can heartily give a thumbs up to saying 2024 campaigns are good now. You have all the tools you need. Mm-hmm. I think overall they are more fun and more interesting. The players have more to do. You will have more to do with the new monsters and stuff. There are some new mechanics. You got your Bastion system. You got the crafting system, and lots of other goodies. So it's a good, if you've not started, especially, it is a good time to start. Or if you have, it's not a bad time to convert now either.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking forward to when we do, which gotta wait for a plot point to happen, and then we will.
Right. Soon.
Yes.
So along with the Monster Manual dropping, we have a new Unearthed Arcana. And this is Unearthed Arcana Forgotten Realms subclasses. So if you remember from a little while ago, we talked about some of the books they announced that will be coming this year. They talked about like the Dragon Anthology, which I'm very excited for. And then they talked about Forgotten Realms, like Sourcebook, essentially. Kind of campaign guide, Sourcebook. And this is kind of the first hints and teases of content that will potentially be in one of those Forgotten Realms books. So there are eight new subclasses that they just dropped on us.
Well, three reworked and five new.
Yes, three reworked and five new. And so we'll just go through them real fast. We're not going to jump into any like super detail or anything. We will link the Unearthed Arcana document on dndiscussions.com. If you want to go check it out yourself, there's going to be a survey coming up as well so that you can give feedback on these if you try them. But Ben, let's start real fast with College of the Moon Bard. And this one is brand new.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I like the idea that, you know, you kind of do your bardic flavor with like using folk tales. So there's three different ones that you get right away. There's like the Tale of Life, which, you know, kind of gives hit points and stuff when you expend bardic inspiration. Tale of Gloam, which is like, you know, when you use bardic inspiration, you can disengage or hide right away. And then Tale of Mirth, which is, you know, basically it's a reroll action and stuff. You know, you give a little joke, the boss laughs and he has to reroll or something. I don't know. but I like the fact that, you know, it kind of goes along with like druidic storytelling and stuff, you know, the whole moon. And the fact that, you know, you get a druid cantrip with it, which is, you know, depending on which kind of bardic route you go, you might get access to druid spells, maybe not. But it's just kind of cool that there's, you know, more of an actual set, like storytelling kind of bard. Whereas, you know, a lot of the different ones that are out there are, you know, very much into like types of performance. This one is literally just, I'm telling stories,
you know? And in the naturalistic.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, a College of Lore kind of thing, which is like, you know, I've studied, I've learned these, I'm spreading these around. This is like, yeah, like you said, naturalistic and, you know, homeopathic, I guess. I don't know the best way to put it. But I mean, your folk tales get more powerful and stuff as they go. Well, you have the blessing of Moonwells. You get, you know, you can cast Moonbeam as a bonus action. I mean, just, you know, kind of some cool flavoring in here. So I'm curious to see if they make a lot of changes to it when it actually gets released or not, and how it would actually play out. Because I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm a big fan of playing bards. I'm going to realize this. It's one of my favorite things.
Bards are incredibly fun.
Yeah. When I do one shots, I have to just basically say, no, I'm not going to be a bard. I'm going to try something different. So I have more experience elsewhere, but I just look at all those subclasses. I'm like, College of Dance would be really cool just to try it out. So
I completely agree. It sounds very interesting. And so next up we have the first rework, the Knowledge Domain Cleric. So if you've played a Knowledge Domain Cleric before, the major updates, you get proficiency with the Artisan's Tools. Your Knowledge Domain spells have been updated to include more damaging and combat relevant options, which is pretty nice because there was definitely a lack of that before. You've got a new feature called Mind Magic that allows you to expend Channel Divinity to cast one of your domain spells without expending a spell slot. That's always cool when you can interact with your channel divinity like that. Mm-hmm. You get a new feature called Unfettered Mind, which grants you telepathy, just straight up telepathy and consistent intelligence checks. And Divine Knowledge is the new feature that allows you to gain advantage on D20 tests for 1 hour. And that's your level 17 thing, but that's still...
That's a bit
super, super cool.
Yeah, it's a bit.
and the one cool thing about the telepathy too, and they talked about this in the video that'll also be linked on D&D Discussions if you haven't seen it, is with the telepathy, you can simultaneously contact a number of creatures equal to your wisdom modifier.
Mm-hmm.
So, and additionally, if your total for an intelligence check is lower than your wisdom score, you just use that score in place of the total. So that's super, super cool. I really like the idea of the multi-telepathy. There's not a lot that plays with that yet. So being able to do that is just kind of a neat, mm-hmm. neat deal.
Yeah, plus on top of that too, all of a sudden, all of your intelligence-based DCs are now going off of your wisdom score, which is generally your main stat as a cleric. That's pretty great. I mean, that turns... when your DM says, okay, can I have an investigation roll? You're like, can it just be perception, please? It turns it into an okay, because you could just do that going forward, which is insanely kind of powerful if you really think about it. I mean, imagine having intelligence being your dump stat until level 6, then all of a sudden it's like, great, doesn't matter anymore. My streetwise knowledge has really given me a leg up on every other thing that I need to know.
Yeah, that's huge. Okay, so next we have our second rework, the Purple Dragon Knight for the fighter. This one has not had an update since the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, which was one of the OGs. It's one of the very, very old original 5e supplements.
Yeah, that
and
was,
they've changed
that was like the how to play D&D pack that they had
type thing. Yeah. It was very early on, but they've changed it quite a bit. And I was reading through some of the comments because there is apparently a lot of lore attached to Purple Dragon Knights specifically. And what they're doing with this subclass is they're giving you an actual dragon companion to fight with you, and that later you can fly on or ride on.
And not being super familiar with this subclass, I already thought that would have been a thing.
And that's what I looked up. Right. I was like, what is this? Apparently the purple dragon knights don't really have a lot to do with like actual riding dragons and such. So a lot of people were like, this subclass is sounds super cool, but it should probably just be called Dragon Knight.
Yeah.
And not purple dragon knight. And I think after looking into it, I think I agree with that. They kind of shoehorned it, I think, a little bit, because your dragon companion is an amethyst dragon. So, you know, you got your purple, you got your purple thing.
Yeah. You got your purple going on.
Yeah. You got your purple going on. You get your dragon in combat. You can resurrect it. You can use it as a mount at level 7, and it has its own, you know, dragon breath. And such, at level 15, it grows even bigger and you can tandem attack and all sorts of things. And at level 18, you get resistance to force and psychic damage because of the amethyst dragon, which is actually a very, very rare resistance to have, just in general. Not a lot of stuff will give you resistance to like force damage or psychic damage. So that's a pretty big thing. Obviously, it comes late at level 18. But yeah, I don't know about the theming, because a lot of that lore is pre my time, yeah, with the game, because I've been primarily a 5e person. But I do love the idea of a Dragon Knight fighter subclass. And I think it's a very good idea. And what they've built here looks super fun, and I would 100% play this, no question.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just having a dragon pet is really, or companion is really cool anyway, but just the idea of having access to that and also being like this really cool knight on top of it is pretty neat. So yeah, it'd be something kind of cool.
Next up. This is really interesting, Ben, because I don't know how I feel about it. It's the brand new Oath of the Noble Genies, and it's for paladins. I'm still struggling to figure out how genies go with paladins.
Okay, let me tell you, I've got it. I'm out and about, doing my thing, and then randomly find a lamp, and then I rub it, and then I'm like, oh, a genie, I want to be a powerful hero. Boom, there you go. Your genie gives you all your powers. I know, stupid thing, but this is a way to give paladins an elemental type of theming, and I think that is great, and it is a really interesting way to do it. Considering, you know, the four different types of genies are, you know, from the elemental planes, as opposed to making it just a pure elemental. It's, you know, giving them kind of more of a not exactly benevolent like kind of spirit to it, but, you know, some sort of higher being still endowing you with powers. And I like the idea of not exactly like warlocking, making deals, but of the genie kind of, you know, using the paladin to, you know, either spread their glory or, you know, doing things for them, you know, like I see it more as like a kind of like a mutual agreement than, you know, like normal paladin worship of, you know, some sort of deity or like a warlock pact of some sort. So in my mind, it kind of works and makes sense that way. And in all honesty, I don't care. I'll make it work somehow, because I think it's a really cool idea. And the fact that paladins now have like some sort of real elemental theming to it is just amazing. You know, tons of fun based on the type of genie that, you know, you want your, you know, powers to come from. You'd have different like, you know, earth, fire, wind, or water types of effects that you can do with your elemental smite, which is really cool. And the fact that you can kind of choose all of those makes it even cooler on top of that. You know, you have your spells that are, you know, kind of more elementally themed than, you know, like radiant themed or, you know, godly themed and stuff like that. You have AC with your charisma modifier if you're not wearing like heavy or medium armor, which I think is really cool. You know, you're going in like kind of with the faith of like the genie's protection of, you know, going into battle like that. It's like a barbarian, but it's like, I'm blessed by a genie. It's cool. Whatever. Don't need this armor, you know, kind of running in and stuff. You know, you've got like elemental shielding on top of you at level 7, which is really cool. You have an elemental rebuke at 15. And then on top of that, at level 20, Noble Scion, you can fly or you get Minor Wish, which basically means that
Minor Wish is cool.
Yeah. It basically, you can make your reaction to, you know, make a D20 test succeed instead of a failure. So basically just all like, yeah, poof, it works. That's it. It's success. I just, it's a cool idea. And I really want to try this out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. It's just neat. Like, seriously, the overall, like I picture Aladdin being a paladin of a genie. Like, you know how there's all those like the Lorcana game or the, like, I don't know, it was like some sort of weird twisted like multiversal Disney stuff that was going on. Like, I could totally picture Aladdin being a genie paladin, you know, like supported by the genie with all these elemental things going on and stuff. Yeah, I roll with that. He never wore armor. Sure, why not? He had great charisma. It makes sense. He used a sword once or twice. Didn't attack anyone. Whatever, you know? It still works.
Okay. You've convinced me. I can see it. I can see it now.
Okay. All right. I can see it now. Good. I'm glad that you follow along. I wish you get a chance to play it and have fun.
Yeah, and maybe I will. I need to do more one-shots, apparently.
Yeah.
Speaking of not one-shots, though, this next class would have been super useful in a campaign that was played for years.
Oh, my God. So
this is brand new Ranger subclass called the Winter Walker. Like, literally, Rime of the Frost Maiden coded.
Yeah.
Like, completely just like... Winter walkers hold their craft in the bleak and frozen wilds of places like Icewind Dale.
What?
Oh, really? Yeah. So it's like the it's the things that go bump in the night when it's snowy type thing. They want you to be this like stalker of the snow. So essentially, like, you get frost resistance, you get extra cold damage that you can use with your hunter's mark. You can get temporary hit points. You get extra cold spells like Ice Knife and Cone of Cold and Ice Storm. You can fortify your companions at level 7, which is super cool. You get Chilling Retribution at 11, which lets you take reactions to basically frighten people that try and hit you, which is super cool. And then at level 15, you get like this, like, I don't know, frozen ghost type thing, yeah, where you get immunity to cold with frozen soul. When you adopt this form and the end of each turn, each creature of your choice in a 15-foot emanation originating from you takes cold damage. You have immunity to being like grabbed, like grappled, prone, or restrained, and you can like move through objects.
Yeah.
So you become this like ice wraith type thing.
Like, if you're playing Rime of the Frost Maiden, choose this and you'll be nigh invincible by level 15. It's like, oh, I don't take any damage. Cold? Okay, great. I guess I'm just going to win the game now.
Pop into your, like, ice wraith form and it's just like, well, I'm immune to most of this stuff. I mean, heck, just having resistance to cold from, like,
really
level 3 would be absolutely huge just because there's so much cold damage in that campaign.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. And
I love the theming. I absolutely love the theming. Obviously, it's a little more niche as far as where it will be useful. Because it's a very specific type thing, but for the places that it fits, I love the theming, and I think it's a very, very fun, well put together kit.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. And then if you played Baldur's Gate 3, here is a really kind of creepy rogue for you to play. So the Scion of the Three.
This is the, am I a bad guy?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, when you have, you know, different level up abilities like at level three called Bloodthirst or Dread Alliance or Strike Fear, it's like this is the Edgelord version of the rogue, which is already the Edgelord class of the game for a lot of it. And I mean, basically, it has to go with the idea of, you know, you're basically worshiping Bane, Baal, and Merkel, which, you know, the dead three gods. So Bloodlust, your sneak attack hits a bloodied creature, which remember bloody's now in. So if it's at half health or low, it's bloodied. The target takes extra weapon damage, which is pretty great. Dread Allegiance means that's, you know, when you finish a long rest, you choose one of the three gods to figure out what sort of damage resistance you get, whether it's psychic, poison, or necrotic, which also gives you a cantrip to play with. Strike Fear, you can, you know, just terrify people at the cost of, you know, one of your sneak attack die, which is pretty awesome. So they're just frightened. Aura Malevolence, you radiate malignant power, which is, you know, damage stuff going on and everything, which is great aura. And then Dread Incarnate. Basically you have advantage on attack rolls against any creature with the frightened condition, which, you know, you strike fear in them and then you just get sneak attack forever at that point. Cause if they're frightened, that happens. Then Murder Intent, when you roll your sneak attack damage, you can treat a roll of a one or two as a three. So it's already more damage on top of that. So it's pretty amazing if you really want to be the, I'm the stabby stabby kill guy.
Yeah, this is your what's the evil guy playthrough?
Dark Urge.
And Baldur's Gate. Dark Urge, yes. Mm-hmm. Your dirge.
Oh yeah.
This is your dirge playthrough in an actual campaign. So make sure that the people you're playing with are okay with that type of character, because this is definitely coded a very specific way. But it could be very cool.
I mean,
so
I'm having a hard time figuring out how to play it in a good campaign, but I mean, there's ways. I mean, Wolverine hangs out on the X-Men, so there's ways.
Yep, it's true. And then for our final new subclass, we have the Spellfire Sorcery, yeah, which is basically a sorcerer that is hooked in directly to the weave, which is D&D's kind of like, this is the essence of magic.
Yeah.
Spellfire Burst, Spellfire Spells, Hone Spellfire, Absorb Spell. I really like the Absorb Spells. I think this is a really, really cool subclass feature at level 6. So basically, once you hit level 6, you always get Counterspell automatically prepared. And additionally, whenever a target fails the save against the counterspell, you regain 1d4 sorcery points, which again can fuel tons of different sorcerer stuff or can swap into spell slots. That seems super cool. And if you roll well, an excellent way to recharge your resources.
Yeah.
Like that's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely love that. And on top of that, too, you know, if you're ever worried about, you know, not having a counterspell ready or whatever, just, you know, counterspell something and then use your sorcery points to get that spell slot back.
Yeah.
You know, might as well. It's something you do if you roll high enough, definitely. But I mean, this is really like I'm digging into the force and I'm going to use this raw power and just, you know, be a sorcerer and just cast left and right with it and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then like most of these subclasses, like their big subclass capstone at level 18 specifically, Crown of Spellfire as a bonus action. Again, bonus action thing. A lot of these like buff type things or preparatory type things have become bonus actions or reactions now, which is awesome. So you don't have to waste an entire turn like turning your thing on, right? Or putting on your jacket. Essentially, but basically for a minute, you get to do a bunch of stuff and you can recover it with a long rest or by spending 7 sorcery points. No action required to restore your use of it. But basically for a minute once per turn, when you are hit, you can spend a number of hit dice. Again, I love this. More mechanics for hit dice.
Yes.
Like more subclasses are starting to get that. And I really like it because it gives much more mechanical value to hit dice besides I'm doing a short rest. Oh, I remembered to roll my hit dice.
Yep.
Because especially once you're hitting level 10, level 15, you've got a heck of a lot of hit dice. So basically once per turn, when you're hit by an attack roll, you can expend a number of hit dice up to a maximum equal to your charisma modifier. You roll them and reduce the amount of damage from that attack to the total rolled plus your sorcerer leveled.
Yeah, so that's automatically already 18 hit points off, which is great. And on top of
if you couldn't use them all, right? Up to your charisma modifier. Yeah, so like you potentially roll five. Yeah. So that's sorcerers have D8s, right?
Either a six or an eight.
Yeah. So I think it's an eight. So you could potentially be blocking like 40 some points of damage.
Yeah. Which that's
depending on how you roll.
And I love the idea of, they kind of mentioned it in the video. It's like kind of like burning your future life force away to live now, which I think is a really cool thing.
Yeah. It's a very, very cool concept. You also get fly speed.
Yeah, but
60 feet.
The big thing is the spell avoidance, though.
Yes.
Where if you've got your burning or your crown of spellfire going, then yeah, it's just like a rogue. If you know you roll a success and take half damage, you actually just don't take damage from a spell. It's great.
Yeah, it's like a cloak of
Cloak of Shadows.
Uncanny dodge I forget it. Yeah, I'm just thinking Cloak of Shadows for some reason. This is the very old school WoW player in me coming out from long ago. But yeah, it's very cool. I love the lore behind it. I love the mechanics for this a lot. And this is 100% a sorcerer subclass I would play, especially into higher levels. There's some really, really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
So big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan.
I love the fact that it's radiant and fire based entirely. I just, I like that.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool theme. And then finally, Ben, our very last one. And this is a redo of a class we have now. It is the Blade Singer Wizard.
Yeah. Cause everyone wants to be Gandalf, I guess.
Got to dual wield that staff and sword, baby.
I guess. I don't know. Like, in all honesty, this is kind of the first time that it's really hitting my radar. So I'm just like, oh, okay, cool. And I mean, that's the first thing that I thought of. Then after I kind of, you know, went more into it and understanding that, yeah, it is actually like, you know, weaving, fighting along with magic and stuff, you know, to make a, well, basically a beautiful song of, you know, fight, the blade song, if you will, which is what they call it. I think it's kind of a cool idea. I honestly don't know if it's something I'd really, really want to play, like just personally, because I know, you know, there are people out there who are super excited for this one, but I like the idea of giving someone who's, you know, really magically inclined a chance to kind of, you know, actually be a fighter of some sort as well, because we have plenty of ways that go the other way where it's like, you know, I'm martial class, but I'm dipping into magic. This is really so much more of I'm a pure magic class, but I'm dipping into fighting. And I like that we have the reverse of that with this.
Yeah. It's a very fun concept. I have someone I know that plays a blade singer wizard, and does some, has some really interesting stuff. It's, I mean, you get some extra defensive stuff, obviously, because wizards in the front line is kind of scary to be completely honest. So yeah, it's a little modified from when it arrived in Tasha's. So check it out. If this is something you're interested in.
Definitely. So that's all the different subclasses that came out with the Unearthed Arcana. And like Ryan always says, we'll have a link to the video in the show notes, as well as a link to the file itself so that you can take a look. And we'll see you know, we'll see what actually ends up coming into play, which all these look like a lot of fun, you know.
And if you have thoughts, make sure to fill the survey out.
Yes,
because there will be a survey on D&D Beyond for these. So if there's some stuff you like, let them know. And there's stuff you don't like, let them know. They talked about they have a new system for their surveys, which I thought was kind of interesting. They mentioned it a little bit in the last video. They haven't gone into the artifice or breakdown of the survey yet, but they mentioned it a little bit. And they are categorizing things like green, yellow, red, as far as people all really like this. People like the concept of it, but want to change, or people didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's a really interesting way to go about it. And I'm looking forward to hearing what the feedback on the artificer was.
Yep. Same here.
All right, Ben. So before we start our wrap up, we wanted to talk just for a short bit about a topic that you had in mind.
Yeah.
That kind of came up with while you were playing your game, as your game and the real world kind of clashed and meshed. So why don't you kick us off?
So something that, you know, you and I have always talked about is, you know, talking with your DM or talking with your players when issues arise or, you know, things come up that could potentially, you know, kind of go against how someone's feeling, you know, safety issues, safety concerns, you know, things like that. It's very important for us as DMs to be aware of what's kind of going on in the game and, you know, what could potentially be happening that could affect people in how they're playing. So this is, you know, usually handled in kind of a session zero setting, you know, where you kind of talk about, you know, hey, I'm good with this. This not so much. I have a giant fear of spiders. Please don't put them in the game. You know, just like could be simple things like that versus, you know, a lot bigger and higher concepts and stuff, depending on, you know, how comfortable people feel. So that's one of the reasons why we talk about check-ins now and then, you know, just kind of make sure everybody's still on the same page and stuff. So in my last session, we had something happen that I had planned out probably a year and a half ago for, you know, kind of like a big plot of what's going on in this country where they had, you know, new leadership. There was changes made to policy. And this, you know, very closed off elven nation opened up their borders. Some of you know exactly what's going into this already, but my players finally kind of got to that nation and stuff. And then the two characters who are from there are kind of seeing changes and things that are happening. And, you know, they came across the bazaar that has, you know, like trade has been opened up and everything except there's a lot of empty stalls. You know, people are kind of being run out. There's a lot of, you know, fear mongering and, you know, frankly, like really kind of, well, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, like racial crap going on where some of the elves there don't agree with this and are treating the non-elf people badly and things like that, which, you know, it's mirroring what's going on in our country right now. And, you know, as they were kind of confronting one of the people, you know, one of the leaders about this, the leaders started, you know, talking propaganda and saying some horrible things. And, you know, we're all playing together. We're all having a fun time. But, you know, one of my players did say, that's getting too real. And then I'm like, I completely agree. And I said, this is something that, you know, I planned out a long time ago and I didn't know that the world was going to change this way. And I just kind of did a hard stop. We kind of talked. I just wanted to make sure everyone was, you know, okay. And I said, I can completely change this. We can move it. We can, you know, not address it. It can happen in the background, you know, whatever. And this is one of the things by, I love my group and I love playing with my group is because we all trust each other. We know that we care and respect each other. And we know that anything said or done or anything like that is, you know, at the table in character or whatever, we step away, we know we're fine. That being said, it is very important to me that they know that they can trust me as well, that that I'm not going to put them in a position that nobody wants to deal with or handle. And especially when we're going into a game to escape and have fun and, you know, enjoy this fantasy world, especially when things in the real world just aren't great. So, after we kind of talked it out for a few minutes and everything, the consensus was, oh no, here we can actually see and affect change in a very fast way. We can actually like fight and attack and defend the people in ways that we couldn't outside of the game world. And I'm like, okay, I am happy with that because frankly, I would like to see that happen to this stuff that is going on because it is also cathartic for me as well. Granted, I still have to play as those horrible people, but I know they're going to get their comeuppance, so it's kind of okay. But, you know, I'm the person who has a really hard time choosing renegade choices in Mass Effect because I like being the good guy. So that's one of the hardest things about being a DM sometimes. But
you say to the person who did all of their playthroughs as renegade.
Oh my gosh, how dare you? Anyways, but yeah, it was one of those things where, again, that hard stop, that discussion, you know, everybody was on board. We talked about it and kind of went through it and stuff. And again, it's so very important to have, you know, those comfortability checks and to talk about things, especially when situations happen or come up or, you know, just kind of, you know, coalesce and are created at the table, because you can't cover everything in a session zero, but at least you know that discussion there and beforehand means that any sort of care is there. And if anybody has any issues or anything, it'll be brought up and listened to.
Yeah. I think that's so incredibly important and just continues the theme of, you know, constant communication, regular check-ins, because things change, the real world changes. And some things can end up mirroring events that you didn't plan on, right? Yeah. I was just thinking about this when you brought this up as a topic, and I had a very similar thing happen in my game because there's a refugee crisis going on in my game. And that mimics a lot of what is happening in several places of the world right now. And a lot of really big stuff has gone on around that. And sometimes you feel very powerless to do a whole lot. And that was part of the discussion, a very similar discussion we had in our game, is no, we can do something about it. Or we can affect change in this world or in this campaign. And I think that's a really great way to think about it. Obviously, if someone does have a problem or doesn't want to deal with something in the real world and in game, that's something you should talk about. And then again, like Ben said, as a DM, you can kind of background it. You can de-emphasize it, or you can just kind of skip it entirely and just kind of work around it from a story standpoint. You're the DM, you are controlling the overarching story. So you have a lot of leeway and power to do those things.
Exactly.
But and again, it was a very good discussion that I had with my group. And I think we reached very similar conclusions to you. I think it's very important to talk through that stuff.
Yeah. It's one of those things where if there wasn't a consensus at all, if one person was like, no, this is too much, I immediately as the DM, yeah, it's not in there. But again, even more so because of the group that, you know, we have, no one would have questioned it. Everyone would have been perfectly happy and fine with it and, you know, to move on in a different path. And again, love my group. Can't say it enough. I know you love your group, but they're not as good as mine. Just hands down. That's how it is. And luckily, you didn't unmute in time or something, so that it wasn't captured. So I win. Okay. There we go.
Wow. Fine. You can have your opinions. We're free to all have our own opinions.
Yes, that's quite true. Quite. Yeah. But anyways.
Yeah, I think it's an important topic. And I think it's something like we're not going to spend much more time on it, but I think it is very important to keep in mind as a DM, especially as you're going through these things, and then keep that communication up, keep those check-ins regular, and that's just how we make sure everyone's having fun.
Yes.
At the end of the day.
Exactly.
Because that's why we play. We play this game to have fun.
Yep. And as you said before, as the DM, you're the one who's in control of the table when it comes to things like that. So if there's a player who is just being completely not cool, that means you talk to them. And if they don't change, then they leave. Just simple as that. With this, if I was the DM and I were to continue something that someone wasn't comfortable with, I wouldn't expect anybody to come back. You know, it's not the way to have fun. We've said it before and I'll say it again. No D&D is better than bad D&D.
Yes.
And we always strive so that it's good and fun and safe. Yep.
All right. So with that, Ben, I think we have come to about the end of our show. But first, you had a community content shout out that you wanted to put in front of people's eyes. And of course, the links of these will all be on dndiscussions.com.
Yes. In fact, this is brought to us by, I can't lie and say it's a listener, but it's someone who listens to half the show. But Nevermore showed me a really cool Humble Bundle that's actually available for, especially if you have a 3D printer. So there's the Dungeon Master Essentials Miniatures and Scenery Bundle. And there is like 116 items available for, I think it's like $30.93. So it has all the files for a bunch of different miniatures and like scenery and cool stuff like that. There's also a couple different ones. There's like a 96 item bundle and a 6 item bundle. But like overall, these are, you know, really cool detailed files. And as I've said many times to you, Ryan, I wish I had a 3D printer. Because this would really help out a ton for some great, you know, scenery and some really cool looking figures. So just to have to throw that out there, that this is an amazing deal, highly recommend it. And, it's really kind of the way to go. But even more so is that your purchase is actually going to help support Make-A-Wish. And that right there is a great charity. It's a good place to go. This is over $1,000 value for like $30.93. Amazing to do. Highly recommend it. It's good for another 14 days. And as of recording, 14 days and like 12 hours.
So you got time. You got time to check it out for sure.
Exactly. But we will have a link to that in the show notes.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely make sure to check that out, especially if you have a 3D printer.
Yes.
Because that is a lot of files, a lot of content. And with that, that will bring us to the end of our show. But of course, for those that like to stick around, we usually talk a little bit about what's going on in our campaign. So Ben, did you get to play since last we talked?
Yeah. In fact, there was a whole comfortability discussion that happened in our last session. I don't know if you heard about that or not, but basically there was a, you know, they're in town. They're kind of prepping, getting ready for this ball where this mob family is going to be, you know, throwing the party and everything. And so, you know, they went to go try to find some, you know, nice fancy clothes and things, and went to the bazaar, kind of found out there's people missing. And the fact that all these like diamonds that were being smuggled are like broken off pieces of like, you know, diamondized corpses and stuff, they might have found a connection there. So like a lot of stuff is leading back to this family of some really bad stuff happening. Plus they found out that a member of the family is like strong arming, you know, some of the foreign sellers at the bazaar. And, you know, it's all just kind of tying up into, you know, a big deal, a big thing that's going on that they, you know, kind of fell into when our paladin's family just kind of ran afoul of this crime boss and or this crime family by just kind of overhearing something that might have been bad. That's, you know, it's all working out. It's pretty great. I'm very happy with how I've kind of put all this together, to be honest. Because yeah, this was, it turned into just a, oh yeah, here's a little side quest we haven't played because I was in the hospital and then recuperating for a long time. Turned into a, hey, this is just a quick little story side quest that turned into, hey, this is actually a major part of what's going on in the world right now. So it was a really fun journey to kind of throw it all together. And I'm excited on where it's leading and how it's going and the stuff that I've got planned for the next session. Yeah.
That is really exciting.
On top of that, I DM'd my first episode of Plus Five to Hit, which I'll talk about in a tiny little bit once we get to our plugs. So.
Yes. That's also very exciting. I'm looking forward to listening to that.
Ooh.
Sure.
Well, what about you? Did you get a chance to play?
I did. We had what I like to call a flashback session.
Mm-hmm.
So after the big bright light of the relic, everyone got a level up. We switched over. We did our 2024 conversions, but then I also had everybody create a level 13 character. I didn't tell them what it was for. But they brought it. And their characters found themselves seeing through the eyes of these level 13 characters.
Ooh.
In the middle of, as they found out as they progressed, in the middle of a war that took place 500 years or more in the past. And it all centered around this relic and this team of people. And there was a fifth NPC with them that ended up turning out to be a silver dragon. And this team of people going to get the relic from this vault and then bringing it to a teleportation circle so they could send it basically somewhere random so that no one would know where it went, but Ooh. Just far away so that the enemy couldn't get their hands on it. And so they got to play through that moment. And obviously it was railroaded to an extent because mm-hmm. this is a flashback. But I gave them leeway kind of to talk and to kind of do a lot of the combat as much as they could. They fought a red dragon at the vault. Then I had this fun little encounter where they had some really good ideas and were able to stealth through a bunch of stuff and avoid some things. And then they got to where this teleportation circle had been prepared. And basically they had to hold out for three rounds and keep the enemies from going and grabbing this relic so that it could be teleported out. And essentially more and more things came each round of the three or four rounds that we played. And they did a great job with these level 13 characters, but the odds just became overwhelming. And then I got to break out the model for my big bad red dragon or lava dragon and got to put it on the table as it landed just to kind of show off like this is what they're dealing with. But at that point, the silver dragon transformed into the silver dragon and went and held off the big bad for one turn before it killed it.
Oh, wow.
Just killed the silver dragon. And by then, like three of the four of them were down or dead. And the crazy level 13 barbarian was still up. There was a really cool synergy between our level 13 paladin and our level 13 barbarian. The paladin, I don't remember what subclass it was off the top of my head, but basically it has something where it can do a bond between you and grants that person resistance to everything.
Oh, wow.
To absolutely every damage type. But you also take the damage that that person takes.
Oh, wow.
Very, very cool conceptually. I really like it, but they used it to great effect. And the barbarian, before they died, even got to kind of do a little hit on the big bad before the big bad, like, you know, breathed.
Flick.
Yeah. They know they're going to need to level up a little bit. But it was incredibly cinematic. It was super cool. They all did a great job kind of rolling with this very unexpected thing. And I was able to drop a lot of lore from the war, this first war, and from the old version of my city, and for the artifact itself. Plus, whatever effect seeing all this through the eyes of another person might, you know, eventually end up having on the characters themselves is super interesting. So yeah. I really liked how it went. They did a great job. I was very happy. And at some point we'll have a whole topic where we talk about doing how to run and how to do that type of session well.
Very cool.
Yeah, but I'm excited. Like, I'm excited. Yeah, we're dropping back into the regular characters next session, which will be fun, especially now they're leveled up and they're in their 2024 versions. But this was a very fun thing that I've been planning for a while, and I'm really glad we were able to do it. And I got to break out some minis. If you go over to my Blue Sky account, I posted some pictures of some of the battle sets and stuff. And so
it looks amazing.
I was very happy. And I got to run several monsters from the new 2024 monster manual.
Hey.
Because it had actually come out a few days earlier. So there's Fire Giants, the Elemental Cataclysm.
That thing is cool.
The Red Dragons. All sorts of really fun stuff for the new monster manual. So it was a great test run too. Very cool.
Very good.
But we will continue talking more about both of these things in future episodes. Until then, though, this is the end of this one. So thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for joining us. And as always, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached if you want to tell us your stories, if you have questions, or if you just want to see some of the stuff we're talking about.
Yeah. If you want to tell some of your stories or definitely what you think about what's coming up with the new subclasses and everything, go ahead and send those emails to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We love getting your mail. Who knows? Maybe if you ask a good question, we'll answer it here. As for, smaller things, that don't exactly need a full email, you can always send us messages on Blue Sky. You can find the show. It is at DN Discussions. If you're looking for Ryan, you can find him. He is at TBK Zord, and I am at Ben Bumhofer. And then, of course, we do have a Discord as well. Join our Discord server. We talk about some fun stuff, share things, discuss some D&D, I guess. I don't know. DN Discussions, D&D. It makes sense. But you can hang out there, chat with some of our community who are always on fire and a lot of fun to talk to. And you can find a link to that on dndiscussions.com, because that is where every single episode has been posted. You can find everything on dndiscussions.com, as well as our links to socials and anything else that you could possibly need. That being said, if you're like, gosh, these guys sure talk a lot about Dungeons and Dragons, I wonder if they actually play. Because, you don't listen to the end of the show where we tell about where we play, which means you wouldn't be listening now, but it doesn't matter. You can always listen to Plus Five to Hit. We finished up Rime of the Frost Maiden. I think the epilogue episode is out. I'm not entirely sure, but we did record the first kind of giving Ro, our DM, a break episode where I DM'd. So you can kind of find out what some of my style is like and how that goes once that episode's out, if it's not yet. So the first episode was fun because they are 2024 characters and I didn't have the new monster manual yet. So it's 2014 monsters and I needed the 2024 monsters badly. little peek behind the DM screen there. All the monsters died on their first encounter with any of the party members. So I'm just like, okay, it has more hit points now. We're just not going to tell them it's dead yet. So that was fun. But they kind of made their way where they were going. And I'm just going to leave it vague so you listen to the show because, hey, know what? I worked really hard on it. But I'm hoping for maybe three more sessions of that before we get back into continuing our, I guess we're calling it a rhyme continued or something like that, because we're going to be picking up with our characters after the epilogue, which is pretty cool considering we're going to have new players. We're going to have new characters. It's going to be pretty great. So yeah, come and join us. My bard will still be there, minus his eye. So I'm looking forward to it. But anyways, that's plus five to hit. This show, DN Discussions, again, make sure you check out dndiscussions.com or anywhere podcasts are played. That being said, Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you. Everybody listening, thank you very much for all of your support. You people are amazing. You're wonderful. Remember that. And until next time, make sure that you roll high and always be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.